Now, talking about interest in standardization, and particularly interest in user-centered approaches, supposedly that was one of the things that Calvin Moore stressed in the development of descriptors and those kinds of things. Did his work influence you?
No. Of course, I knew Calvin. I know Calvin. No, of course, he was into Zador coding.
Right, uh-huh.
And he is a mathematician and a statistician. No, as a matter of fact, we all started using the word descriptor.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, he more or less invented information, expression information retrieval,
mm-hmm.
Which we all picked up. But that's strange. He didn't... excuse me.
From my readings, what I had read was that he was saying with descriptors, get the terms that the users use.
Yeah.
And out of that, that
well,
comes your
so,
vocabulary.
So did users use. Taub had a theory, too, which is, but the terms that are written are the terms that are used.
Mm-hmm.
This is Taub's idea.
Mm-hmm.
And as I recall, Moore said there's an awful lot of redundancy in the written word. There's a difference between retrieval words and discursive words, written words. And most text, particularly by scientists, is discursive.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be purified, should be purified. And that suited his convenience. And if you combine terms, you can produce the levels of specificity or generality that you need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a retrieval technique.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do a generic search,
mm-hmm.
use a few terms,
mm-hmm.
provided that you start out with the right one. You want to do a specific search, combine terms. What do you call that? I call that atomic. And a peculiar expression.
Oh, is that right? I'm not familiar with that. Huh.
Atomic retrieval. And I guess what he was trying to say was that let's get down to the elements of whatever field it is,
mm-hmm.
or fields.
Mm-hmm. Well, your work in user studies saying, let's go ask the user, let's see what the user is actually doing, and his emphasis on saying what terms do the users use struck me as very much parallel with each other.
Yeah, yeah, but the method of determining what they are different.
Yeah.
The goal is the same.
Right, which is...
I remember... having a big fight. I claimed if I were going to make a thesaurus, I would start out by interviewing 100 people in whatever field it was and asking to tell me what the primary words they use, and you can base it on stream of consciousness. What words occur to you when you think of your field? And I make a list from that. And then I had a whole procedure, which I've since written up on numerous occasions, for using that as the beginning step in the development of the thesaurus. I remember. Remember Walter Carlson? Is that familiar name?
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
He was at DuPont for a long time, and then he took over. He was at the National Science Foundation. Nasty guy. But I remember presenting this at a discussion meeting, local, and he laughed me out of the house. You can't make a thesaurus that way. And I said, you can start to make one of them. But in essence, coming back to Calvin, we were trying to attain the same goals, but by different methods.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, speaking of thesaurus construction, other folks were doing word counts from titles and that kind of thing. What did you think of that approach for thesaurus construction? People like Claire Schultz and all kinds of...
I believed it had a future.
Mm-hmm.
I also had a... I was interested, and I wrote a number of reports. Unfortunately, I can't remember when any of them were published. We made thesauri for people.
Right.
And our approach was... let's find the core words, the most frequently occurring words, and then in descending order, what words co-occur with them in the literature. And my theory was, and is, that this will tell you when you need bound terms, and it'll tell you. I used to say, okay, now when you index by this method, you're going to have a list, you're going to have a matrix like that, and a matrix like that. And when you index by this word in descending order, you should also be indexing by that word, and that word, and that word, and that word. And when you search under this term, in descending order, you should be searching on this word, or this word, or this word. And that's what the thesaurus is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, why can't you use this to make the thesauri?
Mm. Is that the approach that you used in the company to construct the ones you did for contracts?
Uh-huh. The big weakness was, then we had to go another step and say, well, what are the synonyms? What are synonyms for these words?
Mm-hmm.
As far as related terms, that was our big contribution. We could always pull related terms like no other method could.
Mm-hmm.
Synonyms
was the problem.
Well, so you'd have to do a search. You know, you'd have to go to thesauri and so forth, Roger or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and try to find synonyms. And it was never perfected. It always improved.
Yeah.
Because you'd find a new way of saying a given concept.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But that was the general approach.
Hmm.
And my argument was, it's better than what there is. Because somebody would always say, yeah, well, what about synonyms? And I'd say, what about related terms?
Well, let's talk about the company. You started in your house. You said you stayed there until it got too big. That meant too many staff.
Mm-hmm.
And what year did you move out of your house? And
in 1962.
Oh, really? So 7 years you were essentially operating out of your house then, huh?
Because we had another house. We had one house, and then we went to another house, and then we went.
Oh.
until they threw us out, more or less. You know, as we were breaking the zoning. And
oh, I see. You mean you bought bigger houses as you went along the way here? Yeah. So from 55 to 62, you pretty much operated out of your house then, huh?
Yes.
Or houses.
I loved it.
Yeah? Yeah. Huh. Well, now, talk to me about those tough issues in terms of getting a company started, cash flow, personnel, getting contracts, particularly the getting contracts.
Well, the getting contract, now most of our work is for government agency. Government and non-profits. It evolved. It used to be really a matter of contacts and PR. And it is still, to a large extent, that, but it's become very highly structured and political. In that they used to advertise, you'd have to, they had all kinds of ways, you'd look at all the, you'd look at budget hearings, you'd look at various sources of information about what agencies are going to be doing,
mm-hmm.
and then you'd get the names of key people involved and get to know them. That's one way. For about 10 years, we didn't do anything. People would call us; they needed us.
In the early years, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can't do that anymore. Everything has to be competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So we used to get regular jobs from the National Science Foundation, just friends.
Mm-hmm. From Atkinson.
Atkinson and before Helen Brownson,
mm-hmm.
Lady Helen Brownson, and between my wife and I, we knew a lot of people, and they would give us jobs.
Mm.
Think of us, we'd have to write a letter proposal or something,
mm-hmm.
give them a price and tell them how we're going to do it. How we thought we were going to do it. But that all changed, and it's changing more and more and more.
Yeah, becoming more bureaucratic and the bid.
Getting very tight.
Yeah. What kind of size contracts are we talking about in the first years?
$20,000.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the first thing that we got, and I remember being in the house. We got a $12,000 contract for the National Science Foundation. And that was pretty big at the time for us. And I think, and they really didn't know how to handle these things.
The NSF didn't know how?
Yeah. And their mechanisms. So one day in the mail, a check for $12,000 comes in, which was a godsend.
Yeah, I bet so. And what kind of staff? When did you first add on the first staff member?
Oh, I remember the first one was a secretary. And then we had... We had a guy named Gene Brandes, who was a survey specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And we had... Walt Johanningsmeyer, who was an engineer, who was interested in information centers. These were all around 1960.
Before you began to use folks other than you and your wife?
Yeah.
You were living entirely off of this once you left Atlantic Research Company. You were and your wife were both living off of the company's work?
Yeah.
Did she quit her job with the British Embassy?
She quit in 58.
58.
So yeah, the answer is yes.
Were things a little tight sometimes?
Sometimes. Sometimes. I can't remember. As a matter of fact, that's funny. Because I don't recall ever suffering any privations, but we must have.
May have held off on eating out a little bit or something, huh?
Yeah. Remember going to a lot of cocktail parties.
I have always imagined the starting your own company as just kind of being terrifying, because that dependable paycheck is hard to give up.
Yeah. Well, both of us are sort of adventurous in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
She, in her way, she was always a freelancer. She did a lot of freelancing, just translating and abstracting and indexing.
Mm-hmm.
So she had one foot in the government and one foot outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was sort of used to it, and I was sort of an adventurer.
Yeah.
We never discussed it in those terms.
Yeah.
She always considered herself very prudent and conservative, but she was pretty courageous.
Mm. So she was bringing in money with her translating work. Mm-hmm. Who was your main competition at that time?
Oh, Doc Inc., I guess. Some of these, I remember consulting firms used to, I'm talking about Booz Allen and Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
They would get into it every once in a while.
The big guys.
Yeah, I remember being in shock. Because they were past masters at marketing. And we really didn't know anything about marketing, the concept. The idea of taking somebody out to lunch was unheard of.
Oh, yeah?
Never. Never. I remember bragging, telling somebody, my clients take me out to lunch. I don't take them out to lunch. Talk about presumption and naivete.
Yeah.
But we really got, in a sense, for a period, we were very sort of popular. In other words, we were, I don't know whether we were comedians or something, but people enjoyed our company. So that we did a lot of selling that way.
Mm.
Go to meetings and raise hell.
Yeah. Huh.
Remember Claire? They were all of them, Garfield. Oh, we got Borco. We used to have good times.
Hmm.
And we were selling to one another, in a sense.
Because they had various contracts that they were...
Garfield used to throw me an occasional contract.
Yeah.
I remember him berating me, perhaps rightfully, that I don't throw enough stuff his way, and he's always trying to help me. I guess he was. One of the things, Garfield for a long time was a bachelor, and when I got married, and he had been married long before, I wouldn't say we became estranged, but we sort of separated. I became preoccupied with being married. And as a matter of fact, he married about four times after that. He made up for lost. But that had an effect on our... I just liked the idea of being married. I don't know why.
Yeah. Huh. And he was kind of the freewheeling type.
Are you sure?
As a bachelor, huh?
Yes, sir. I remember we were at some meeting, and we're registering for the hotel, and Garfield comes up, and his whole face is covered with lipstick, and and he looked dazed, and he must have been in the middle of an affair.
Wow.
But he always ended up marrying him.
Well, now, you said Taub was your main competition, more so than anyone else.
Well, various people. It depends. In user studies, this American Institutes for Research, which you've heard of, they gave us competition. And so damn many of them.
Yeah. What about Yonkers, Termitrex, and Westat, and those folks?
Yonkers, not Westat. Westat were friends of ours, Don King, at the time. As a matter of fact, we did a lot of talking together. We never, did Don King at Westat before he left Westat. We always discussed methodologies and discussed collaborative efforts. That was
But Yonkers was most...
Yonkers, well, I tell you what they did. What happened was that he was just in the machine business. He was selling these Termitrex, trying to sell them. And then, this would be about 1962 or 3, I think. He had a... There was a huge... Everybody was having underwritings. And I remember he and Jerry Sofar raised $2 million. They went to a little bucket shop who got him $2 million. And that got us into it. They got them into a completely different... They were still doing Termitrex, but then they started competing with us for projects.
Oh, to do the kinds of studies you were doing, huh?
Not only studies, but they were also operating information services and so forth. Because another thing that we got into, one of the first projects we took on was the recataloging of the United States Post Office Library. It had a legal library, it was a huge thing. We did a recataloging, and that was a big job for us. And there we competed with Taub. He was a competitor, and we got the job. And that was God, right at the beginning, the first jobs we did. But
was it possible to stay friends with these folks?
Not with Taub.
No, he was. Oh, what, you know, too competitive?
He was nasty.
How so?
Well, I remember getting a call from Tao one day. He wants to have lunch with me. And so I have lunch with him. And he says, the reason I want to talk to you is because I am being sued by members of my staff who have put in a complaint to the Labor Department about me not giving them compensatory time or something. And he says to me, did you have anything to do with this? And I said, how would I know what you do? The answer is no. Sort of paranoid. So I would say that that's a very unpleasant thing. And he used to do that. He used to have fights with Perry and all. he would disagree with intellectually. I remember in a paper that he wrote, he called Cassandra Perry, and he would go on.
Well, I read in one of Perry's articles that someone in the discussion that was recorded and printed, somebody asked Perry a question about Tubbs' machines or ideas, and he said, well, I have to be very careful because I have been threatened with a suit by these folks. And so I figured there was hot stuff going on there. Was Tom that type that would sue in a flash and accuse you of stealing his ideas?
And also trying to hurt him.
Oh, yeah?
For spite. He had this idea, I guess that was how he acted. I guess he assumed logically that's how people act.
Yeah. What other unpleasant dealings did you have with him?
Well, I just didn't like him personally. I thought he was an ostentatious. I didn't like the way he dressed. I didn't like anything about him. He was very, very vain.
Oh, yeah? He was a flashy dresser? Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. And he just went for appearances. And that meant a lot to him.
Yeah.
And and I was my old sloppy self. I remember when I had this lunch, and I did this intentionally, where he asked me if I had anything to do with the fact that his staff was suing him and so on. I remember I had gotten my first suit at Brooks Brothers, and I remember it. I thought it was a beautiful suit, and I remember taking great pains to wear that suit just to show him.
You wore it to the luncheon. Did he comment?
No, but I want him to be duly impressed.
Yeah.
Maybe getting all kinds of food over my new suit.
Well, we'll stop there because we're about at the end.